Well, I appear on a lot of radio shows, and I'll tell you, in all honesty, I enjoy being on your show more than any because we have such a good time and talk about a lot of great things.
There's no such thing as an Alan Cutler humble opinion. It'll be a softly spoken opinion. There's no...
Okay.
Alan, I hate to say you're right, but when you're right, you're right. And this is something you're right about.
Hello, Mark. Mr. Pope, 1996.
Oh, my God. What? Hey, let's give it up right here. This is my guy. Yes. I'm so happy to see you.
Hey, gratitude is a skill, guys, that if you practice, will give you a joyful life regardless of your circumstances.
Hello.
Pete Rose.
Yes, sir.
Here is Charlie Hustle.
Yes, sir.
This is Ronald Reagan.
Thank you. Nice talking to you.
Well, listen, I just wanted to say congratulations for breaking one of the most enduring records in sports history, Ty Cobb's career hit record of 4,191, and now, unless you've done something, because I've heard the latest, you've made it 4,193.
Wow. Wow. Good afternoon. I'm Alan Cutler, honored and pleased to be with you. You know, I remember that moment. I was watching on TV. Jimmy, don't even tell me it was before you were born. I already know that. And it was one of those really cool moments with Marty Brenneman, one of his best friends, standing next to him with Pete Rose announcing that. We'll get into Pete. We'll get into Pope. We are honored and pleased to have Alvin Brooks, associate head coach of the University of Kentucky basketball team. He'll be at 1 o'clock. Chris Fisher, who does a great job not only covering Kentucky, but he's really no filter. And that's a little unusual how strong he is based upon what he does for a living. Chris is really, really good. And we'll talk to him at 12:30 as he's in his car. And if he would have decided to cancel today, I would have understood. But he did not, so we're honored and pleased. And Jimmy, I got to put you on notice. I did something incredibly stupid this morning. So I take a lot of vitamins and stuff like that, and that's fine. Just kind of my way of the world. And I really haven't slept much in the last 3 days. So I have a B12 spray, which I occasionally take, and it's really good for energy, right? So I've taken it 3 days in a row. I've done something incredibly stupid. So if I fall asleep, Jimmy, you will have to take over the show. Uh-oh. Now, since we're in Zoom, Jimmy's got very curious eyes. I took what I thought was three shots of B12. Then I looked at it and went, oh, blank, blank. And trust me, the blank, blank was something that Jimmy would have to press the button if I said what I said out loud. I also have this melatonin spray that Judy and I take just about every night. I think it's really healthy for you, whatever. And it's been right next to the B12 for quite a while. And I remember when I put that in the refrigerator, when we got some more of these melatonin, organic, natural stuff, a side of my brain said, you know, this is not a very intelligent thing to put this by the B12. So, Jimmy, a few hours ago, I took three shots of something that should help me go to sleep. So to counterbalance that, I've drank so much coffee this morning. It's crazy. And it's like, you know, one side of your brain is telling you one thing, right?
Yeah.
And the other side of the brain is telling you something else. And I'm telling you, my body feels so strange. It's off the charts. So if in the middle of doing the show, I fall asleep, Jimmy, I know the show will be in good hands and you will take over. But I also kind of thought, I needed to warn you. Isn't that fair?
Yeah, I think so. This what you're saying is this could be one of the most volatile shows that we've ever had. Could end up being the best show ever with your brain really battling itself with, I don't know if we should stay awake or go to sleep. You could just have some of your best ideas ever come out today.
I hope you're right, but I doubt that. Here's the other thing. I'm a little lucid and I'm a little concerned. And this is why I think I'm talking a little slower. Am I talking a little slower? Or is this my imagination?
No, it still sounds the same.
Oof.
That's what I mean. This could end up being one of the greatest shows you've ever had.
It wouldn't take much to do that. I honestly believe I'm talking slower on purpose so I don't misspeak or say a word that you have to hit a button. So if you're telling me I sound normal right now, I've got a problem, Jimmy. Okay, we'll get past that, and I just want you to be on your toes.
All right.
Okay, here's the other thing. Today, Judy and I hit Jackie Robinson, and Jackie Robinson wore number what?
42.
42 years Judy and I have been married. The woman is a saint. Thank you. Thank you. 42 years. And I think if you ask either one of us how we got here, we'll probably say we don't know. And I think that's pretty normal for couples who've been around for a while. So it's a special day. It's me. I hope I don't sleep through it.
What a way to celebrate. What happened on your 42nd? Well, I took melatonin way too early in the day, and that was it.
I can't wait to tell my brother and sister, because of all the dumb things that I've done, goofy things, that kind of stuff, they'll both go, yeah, not surprised.
That's so, on par.
It really is. I'd like to say it's not, but it really is. Okay, so back to the Pete Rose thing. And especially yesterday, Hal McCoy was so poignant and emotional because of his relationship with Pete. That was really good. And we might be doing some stuff also tomorrow about Pete. There was something about Marty Brenneman, Jeremy Rausch, Cincinnati TV sportscaster, former intern for me and us at LAX 18 1,000 years ago, got to Marty, and he said this: I really don't know what to say. I can't believe he's gone. My two best baseball friends are gone. First, Joe Morgan, and now Pete. Right now, it's hard for me to come to grips with it. Kyle Macy. During my recruiting trip to the University of Cincinnati in 1975, the coaches took my parents into the Reds dugout before a game. We're talking big red machine days, exclamation point. Highlight was Pete Rose gave them an autographed bat. Although I ended up not attending UC, it made a lasting impression on me, and I became a Pete Rose fan. R.I.P. Charlie Hustle. Jimmy Burrell. Joe's father. A friend of mine called one day and said, I'm with someone that wants to ask you a question. Guy got on the phone and asked, are you the one who taught Joe Burrow to play tough like I play baseball? It was Pete Rose, said he loved watching Joe. Wow. R.I.P. Hit King from Joe Burrow. Like, none of this surprises me. I didn't know. Well, I knew the Marty Brenneman thing, but I didn't know the Kyle Macy thing. I didn't know the Joe Burrow dad thing. You know, the way the country is put together, I can't imagine that folks in Seattle understand the power of Pete Rose to the extent it was back in Cincinnati. And by the way, that's not negative. I think that's just human nature. And he was a symbol. By the way, and I just finished this book a couple months ago, and I talked about it, the latest book, Keith O'Brien, and it was really powerful and really rough in a lot of parts of Pete. His dad played semi-pro football for, it was over 15 years, maybe 19 years, something like that. It was over 15. Can you imagine playing semi-pro football at that advanced age? And he was a star. I mean, when you look at his background from whence he came from, it is easy to understand where he got that drive and desire. So we might do some more Pete Rose. I thought those things were poignant. He belongs in the Hall of Fame. Let's do Bob Costas. Bob Costas was with Dan Patrick, and this is a snippet of what he said. And my respect for Bob Costas is off the chart. He had a kid who went to Kentucky, and I don't remember what year it was. I'm sitting baseline in my typical media seat, and all of a sudden, he starts walking over and sits down right in front of me. And I said, Bob, what the blank are you doing here? By the way, not that I knew him. I never met him before. So it's not like, hey, this is a great friend. And he says, my kid goes here. I said, wow. I said, hey, that's all I said, Jimmy. He says, I got it. And he knew. He pulls out his wallet, and he was known for, my hero growing up was Mickey Mantle. Bob Costas' hero growing up was Mickey Mantle. So he took out his Mickey Mantle baseball card that he carries with him. And we had a nice short laugh and a short conversation. We said something at halftime or whatever, and that's all it was. But it was pretty cool. I mean, he didn't expect Bob Costas. And by the way, they gave him like a booster seat. And as far as I know, if he ever went to another game, he wasn't sitting on in front of press row. So I thought that was pretty cool. And here's the final comments he had talking about Pete Rose.
Thank you, Green. If you have 10 seconds here, you know, justice is one thing. Justice can be tempered by mercy. No one is nominating, even in death, Pete Rose for Citizen of the Year. But it's cruel and unusual punishment that the game he loved and the game he gave so much to and is so much a part of its history turned its back on him in the case of the Hall of Fame. He's represented in the museum itself, but not in the plaque gallery. I went into the Hall of Fame with him once, and he stood in front of Ty Cobb's plaque, and I backed away because he was looking at that plaque in awe and thinking, he wasn't a reflective man, that's for sure, but thinking in that moment, I'm linked in history with Ty Cobb. Why am I not here? Now, part of the answer is by your own doing, Pete. But other people could have undone that part of it by tempering justice with mercy in his case. And now, if someday he gets in, if someday they relax the rule and he gets in, it seems almost just as cruel because he can't smell the roses, no pun intended.
That's really good. And there are so many people saying the similar kind of thing. Don't put him in now. Don't put him in now. But I've been on a champion this, and I've told this story many times since they put Ron Santo in. And why the hell they didn't do it when he was alive. I thought it was disgusting. I don't know if you remember the rant, but I did a rant that I was angry, and you could feel my anger. What? Your numbers don't change. It just doesn't change. It is what it is. Just, whew. Okay, I want to switch and do a quick little baseball thing, and then we're going to play a little Mark Pope sound, courtesy of the Courier Journal. So, Jimmy, do this. Independently, first start with Fernando's home run, Tatis, and tell me when you had it. And I noticed something yesterday that I wish the Yankees would tell Anthony Volpe to do what I'm about to suggest happened in all these games. It's a fascinating thing. I don't need a batting coach to tell me. I know I'm absolutely right. And it's a really interesting part of what is going on in playoff baseball. Here is Tatis' home run for San Diego.
He swings, sends one high and deep to left. He's watching, so are 44,000 others. Oh, what a start for the Padres as Tatis leaves the building, and this place is on its feet. Padres lead it 2-0.
So here's what happened yesterday, and I noticed it right away. I was watching the games, but I really watched the highlights more than anything else. And I'm seeing all the clips of all the runs and stuff like that. And Jimmy, there was a common theme. Players were not over swinging. Players were just swinging smoothly and hitting line drives. Now, Tatis went deep, okay? And Higgy, the former Yankee backup catcher that just ticked me off when the Yankees didn't sign him. They kept Trevino, who I like a lot, but I would have kept Higgy even though he's 34. And in a part-time role, he didn't have 250 at-bats, and he had 17 home runs. And he's a great defensive catcher. Not saying the best in baseball, but he's really good. So is Trevino, by the way. But I've always liked him better. There were two home runs yesterday. Jimmy, if I missed something, let me know. You got four games and two home runs. So what I saw is players adjusting, and as far as I'm concerned, this is how it should be all the time. Quit being concerned about home runs. I saw guys who strike out a lot very smoothly hitting line drives for base hits, and the swings went smoother. Going to Volpe, who's the shortstop of the Yankees, and they talk about, you know, he's not hitting enough versus his rookie year and that kind of stuff. He overswings. He's really strong. And this has been one of my pet peeves, is that too many players in baseball overswing instead of just hitting a little line drive. And I'm telling you, that was one of the big keys in baseball yesterday. It really was. Guys taking singles and doubles and putting them together and having it happen. It's not normal to see that in so many games. So I don't know what's going on. Maybe it's an aberration. Maybe it's an accident. But I can tell you, there were guys swinging much easier. And if you watch enough baseball like I have, you could really tell. Now, on the other hand, Michael King. Oh, my gosh. And this could turn out to be a horrendous trade, for the New York Yankees. What he did yesterday for San Diego was record-setting as a pitcher in the playoffs.
Make good contact.
Not fair. And again, would have absolutely kneecapped a left-handed hitter. At what point does it look like a strike? That's a dozen punch-outs.
Well, if you're sitting at home and you're wondering, how do they swing at a pitch so far outside? It's because where it's coming from, the angle of attack.
Really good comment by David Cohn. It's the angle. But the point is, didn't give up a run, 12 strikeouts. Yankees get Soto, and San Diego was not doing the trade without Michael King. And so the Yankees finally acquiesced. Well, King's not a free agent next year. It's not the year after that. I don't know how many years it is, but he's under control and he's not very expensive. Now, if he continues this, someday he's going to be really expensive. We all know that. And so the Yankees gave up a lot to get Soto. It's all part of it. If I'm a betting man right now, I'm going to say that Soto won't be a Yankee next year. If I'm a betting man, I think he's going to be with the Mets, because they will spend more money than Steinbrenner will. And the owner has more money than Steinbrenner does. And the owner will pay through the roof. And because the Mets are in the playoffs, and this is big, it's way different than the Mets only won, let's say, 75, 78 games. Because they're a really good team. You put Soto on that team, and they're a different team. And so it's a gamble when you do these kinds of things. We all get that. But right now, if I'm a betting man, and by the way, Soto had what, 41 home runs or something like that? And his on-base percentage was over 40% of the time, and he drove in over 100 runs, and he's a great guy with a great attitude, and he handled New York like Stradivarius perfectly. And it's obvious he loves playing on the Yankees. I think he does. And it's obvious he and Judge are friends, and he's been welcomed perfectly. But you know what? With that attitude, he'd be welcomed perfectly with the Mets. And so I'm watching King do his thing, and Jimmy, I'm telling you, I'm going – and I don't talk to Yankees much, but this is a money thing, and I think it's kind of interesting. I'm watching and I'm going, pausing, going, oh, blank, blank, blank. Renting Soto for 1 year in all probability, and it's not just King that they have, but, you know, he pitched yesterday like somebody who might someday potentially win the Cy Young Award. Wouldn't you agree with that, Jimmy?
Yeah. I mean, especially doing that in your first postseason appearance at home in that raucous environment. I mean, that's as good as you could have pitched.
It's amazing.
That's ice cold.
Oh, oh. It ticked me off. Ticked me off not a little. It ticked me off a lot. But you know what? It's part of the game. It is what it is. Let's flip to Mark Pope. Ryan Black, as Pope has talked to everyone, it seems like, has a little video from his interview with Mark Pope. So with Curtising Black and the Courier Journal, and there's two words that sum up what Pope is trying to do. Competitive spirit. Competitive spirit. Chip Rupp, who was on the other day, and there's certain things that he's seen in practice. He's been asked not to talk about it. I respect that. We appreciate having Chip on. He's a wonderful guest. And right now, there's a lot of turnovers going on, and it really doesn't bother me. I mean, it'd be nice if there were no turnovers, duh, no kidding, but it really doesn't bother me because, Jimmy, it's not even blue-white time. Close. Not even exhibition time. Close. It's not even the first game time. Close. And I think these kids are going to get it. I wasn't expecting anyone to secretly say, oh, man, this is a well-oiled machine. No. No. But I really believe that these kids because of how smart they are, how old they are, how much they want to mesh together, they're learning a totally different way to play basketball. A totally different way. None of these guys have really played like this except for Jackson Robinson. And you might say, well, basketball is basketball. I'm sorry, it's a totally different style. If these kids were working out the way Pope wants, and then tomorrow, boom, he comes in. Never going to happen. It's not the point. He comes in and says, we're going to do it like Eddie Sutton. You know, you guys are doing such a bad job playing my style. I'm changing everything. And you got to make seven passes before you shoot. To me, that would mess him up, right? Don't you think it would mess him up? It'd mess him up tremendously.
Yeah.
So the fact that they're apparently turning it over a lot in practice doesn't bother me at all. Not at this point. It's not January. And the one thing Kentucky fans don't have, and Kentucky's not the only one, is patience. There's a lack of patience. And so, so what? Okay, Jimmy, you have the Pope sound. So Pope's thing is about a competitive spirit. Now, he knows he's got shooters, duh. So he's not concerned about that. You have good games, bad games, and whatever. But he's working on the competitive spirit. He sees it. It's not totally there yet. It's there in theory and part reality is my interpretation of what I've heard, what I've been told, those kinds of things. Here is Mark Pope with Ryan Black of the Courier Journal.
For this year's team, what are maybe three things that, you know, if you say, if we solve this, we're going to be able to accomplish what we want to accomplish?
Well, if we win every game, then we'll be right there, close to the standard. If we can win every game, we would almost reach the standard that makes Kentucky so beautiful, right? But right now, all the things we see on the court are a result of the foundation that they're standing on, and so the things we're looking for on our team is we're looking for our competitive spirit. Like, if that's an unquenchable competitive spirit, then we're going to be really special. A competitive spirit that just knows no softening, right? If we're together, like, if our guys are caring more about each other and more about this team and this state and the name on the front of this jersey than they are about their own agendas, which is really hard to get to, then we're going to be really special. And if our guys are believers, then we're going to be really special. If they're believing in what we do and how we do it in each other and in themselves, we're going to be really special. So I know those things seem like they're 30,000 foot, but they are. There's a reason they're 30,000 foot is because, you know, those are the principles that you build on to have really great results.
You know, outside of Jackson, who is the one guy you'd previously coached, is there one player that you brought in that's like, not thinking you would never have brought someone you didn't think could play, but has maybe been, you just like, he's even better than I thought he was a guy.
I had a lot of guys like that, actually. I've been so pleased with how our guys have learned and understood what we're trying to accomplish on the floor. It's one of the, you know, there's a lot of scary things about building a team out of the portal. There's a lot of things that you just can't accomplish when you have to build a team out of the portal. But one of the benefits of doing it is you get to recruit guys that have a lot of data points, not just a lot of analytical data points to understand their game, but a lot of video to see what plays they're able to make and where they kind of live in the basketball universe in terms of stylistically where their superpowers are, right? And so we got to kind of build a team a little bit that way. And I've been really pleased with every single one of our guys. I think right now our young guys are blowing me away. The first day of practices this summer, they were exactly who I thought they were. And then they have just grown so fast, and they're assimilating information so fast, and their confidence and their vision and their understanding is growing so fast. That's been really exciting for me.
Okay, the first thing I take out of this, Jimmy, and think about your first take. The first thing I take out of this, it is so unusual to listen to a coach in today's world that is this positive. By the way, and this feeling isn't new, but I think it's amplified again by what I heard and what I'm listening to. He manages through positive pushing. Basketball uniform, universe, where these guys fit in the basketball universe, where they have their own superpowers, right? And he says they're so positive. And he's talking about how these guys have grown so fast. And when they showed up for the first practice this summer, these guys were exactly what he thought. In other words, they weren't polished. They weren't ready. They had to learn. They're trying to please him, which most players do. And they're trying to do it together. I'm going to push the positive thing. He has talked to a psychologist about the way he, I don't want to say criticize, because criticize is a negative thing, but it's really not negative to me, depending upon how you look at it. Perhaps a better way is say his teachings will be done more often than not, way more often than not, from a positive point of view. Jimmy, did you get that from this?
Yeah, I got the same thing. And it's where, yeah, you could say the critique is a negative, but as long as it's constructive criticism, which that's the difference in just a regular coach and a great coach, is the constructive criticism. Don't just yell at me and tell me I did something wrong. Tell me what I did wrong and how to not do it again. And also, he's probably very good at turning it into like, hey, I see where you were. Your effort was there and you did X, Y, Z, but let's just take that same effort and just do it this way instead of just demeaning a kid and yelling at a kid. And I think that's where, and I haven't been in either practice, but just hearing how he talks, I feel like that's, he's a very good communicator when it comes to critiques.
The day we had Cody Fuger on months ago, I think it was months ago, one of the things he talked about, and he's been with Pope forever, is that kids today don't want to be beat down.
Yeah.
And you cannot coach that way. And so this is a different style. It's a totally different style. I'm not saying he's the only one doing it, because the truth is, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think he's still in a minority, and I think it's possible that he can end up being in majority as time goes on, as time goes on. Yet, on the other hand, I was listening to Sound with Becky Hammons last night as her team went on to win. And I think she's a great coach. And I think it's just BS that nobody in the NBA hired her to be a head coach. So she's one of the top two or three head coaches in the WNBA. And man, she's tough on the girls. She is tough. And her thing was, hey, if somebody makes an 18 footer and you're playing defense, you know, just go back, and that's just the way it is. But they were giving up too many layups, and she went crazy on her ladies. Crazy. And there aren't a lot of pro coaches that are doing that now. She gets away with it. She does. So I'm saying both styles can still work. They can. Probability-wise, I think Pope's style is most beneficial. I really do. I think he's in the forefront. And when you're talking to a psychologist, a lot of coaches talk to psychologists. Bob Bertella was Cal's guy that he used, and he helped the players out and stuff like that. So I don't make it sound like Pope is the only person talking to someone to help get some positive spin, because that's BS. But because he's that smart, he's so conscious of how he does it. Cal's not that positive. Really? My ripping Cal? No, I'm just saying it's a different style. Guess what? Cal's in the Hall of Fame with his style. Well, Pope's not in any Hall of Fame yet. Let's see where he is 15 years from now. The point is this. When you talk about a player, I want to see what each player's superpower is. Dude, that is spectacular. I love it. I love it. And I wonder how many high school coaches will pick up on Mark Pope. I don't know if there are high school coaches coming to watch them practice or if he's allowing them in. I'm assuming that will happen. Pope will be gracious about that. That's my assumption. Plus, it could help with recruiting and that kind of thing. And it's the right thing to do when you're head of Kentucky and that kind of thing. But I can see veteran high school coaches picking up from what he's doing, Jimmy. I really can.
Yeah, the whole superpower thing, like that's a really cool way, because there's been other coaches that have probably said similar things or had the same mindset. But just putting it that way, and like you said, empowering the players, and not in a way that you're coddling them and they never do anything wrong and he never raises his voice. He probably does, but it's the way you go about it, and it's developing that trust with the players where if he ever does lose his cool, which I'm sure he does, but they know it's coming from a good place, and he's developed that, you know, chemistry with them, and they trust that whatever he's doing this, or when he does lose his cool, we must have really done something. So we need to shape up and listen to what he's doing.
I wonder how much he loses his cool. He's human.
Oh, yeah.
I just wonder. It's probably different for most other coaches, but I don't know one. I'd love to see it. Look, hey, Mark, if you want to invite me to practice three times a week, I'll be there. How about that? I would be there. I really would. I think it would be fascinating. I'm still waiting on that invitation. By the way, Alvin Brooks, associate head coach for University of Kentucky, will be joining us at 1 o'clock. Coming up in about 2 minutes or so, Chris Fisher does a wonderful job covering Kentucky. We have John Rothstein tape that will play later. He's with CBS Sports. He's one of the top basketball guys around, and he's allowed in practice because he's a national guy. I don't like it, but I get it. More power to anybody who gets in. I have not been invited. Can you tell how upset I am, Jimmy?
I wonder if you'll recover.
Probably. Terry Page. Not a very good. A great licensed massage therapist. She says you don't have to live with your pain. Text her or call to get an appointment. She had to switch my appointment this week, and guess what? I can't get in. She's totally booked up. This has happened now a couple times in the last month. She's that booked up. She's worth having patience to go see her. Use my name. Tell her you heard it on my show. 859-373-0578. 859-373-0578. Listen anywhere in the world on WLXG.com.
The Alan Cutler Show on ESPN.
Standard size candy bars, 2 for $3, and assorted Hostess single serve snack cakes, 2 for $4.
Clark's Pump and Shop. Return, refresh, refuel.
Back to No Filter Radio with Alan Cutler. Podcasts on Apple, Spotify, and Google, Monday through Friday.
Welcome back. Alan Cutler, 1300 AM, 92.5 FM. Alvin Brooks coming up at 1 o'clock. And now he should have canceled on me because he's with his kids and he's still doing it. He's in the car. Chris Fisher, you're crazy. Thank you very much. Really, you're crazy. But thank you. If you said, hey, let's do another day, I would have said, and I should have said, not today. That's really my fault. You're always kind with your time. Tell the world your official title, what you're doing, and how everybody can find you. Because if I don't give you two good plugs for you coming on today, shame on me.
Chris Fisher, at Chris Fisher 247 on X, formerly known as Twitter, and at catspaws.com, part of the 24/7 Sports Network.
And for a guy, and I don't know if I said it to you when you've been on the air, but I've said it other times talking about you, you're really no filter considering that you're really covering a team for what I call a fan publication, to which it can be a little difficult, but I respect how you do it. You're not afraid to criticize. You don't rip. You can't rip doing what you're doing, and I don't know if that's your style anyway, but you don't do it. And I've always appreciated your honesty about Kentucky.
I appreciate that. You have to be fair, and that kind of swings, both ways. I mean, you can give criticism when it's warranted, and you can give praise when it's warranted. And, I think that's kind of how you build credibility, because, if all you do is praise, then it doesn't mean that much. If all you do is criticize, it doesn't mean that much. So you have to be fair and objective and kind of fall somewhere in the middle.
Okay, so now you look at this Kentucky football team, and they're not in the top 25. They shouldn't be in the top 25 with a 3-2 record. But are they one of the top 25 teams in college football now?
I think that's safe to say. I think you could argue. I think certainly top 25. I think you could maybe even argue top 20. As far as the college football playoff is concerned, I think a win at number 6 Ole Miss and a 1-point loss to then number 1 Georgia would probably give Kentucky what I would call a bubble college football playoff resume. That's certainly as good a two games that any team has put together this season. And so the fact that Kentucky was stride for stride with two of the best teams in college football to this point in the season, I think is pretty impressive. And I think with that win, it puts everything back on the table for Kentucky. I think in a lot of ways, they control their own destiny. I think, you go into the bye week, you feel good about that, you get rested up, you get healed up, you give the offense another week to kind of incubate and, hopefully iron out some of the wrinkles that we've seen to this point in the season. And then you have a very winnable three-game stretch of Vanderbilt, Florida, and Auburn. And if you take care of business in those games, all of a sudden you're 6-2 going into Tennessee. You have Texas and Louisville waiting at the end of the schedule. And so for me, I think it just puts everything back in play for Kentucky to have a special season, however you would define that.
And, you know, if you beat Vandy, Florida, and Auburn, they're going to be favored in all three, and they should, but that doesn't mean you definitely win. Kentucky's done some things, right, and they've lost games like that. But if you win all three, then this team, who knows how their confidence will be going into Tennessee. And the way I look at it, look, we're not sure how many losses teams will have. There are going to be plenty of teams, I think, with 2 and 3 losses, I think will still probably get you in the playoffs because of the expansion. 4? No. So I look at it this way. If you beat Florida, Auburn, Murray State, Vandy, and then 1 and Louisville, you're going to have to beat either Texas or Tennessee is a guess, depending upon how everybody else does. And who knows what everybody else is going to do. You're probably going to have to beat one of those two to get into the playoffs. Is that too strong, or you think they won't have to do all that? And this is just conjecture at this point. But Chris Fisher, my gosh, the fact that we're even talking about this at this point is kind of goofy. It's goofy. I mean, there's no way at 3-2 if you'd have told me in August we'd be talking about this now. No way.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. Everything is back on the table. Now, I think you're right. I think 9-3 is probably the number, which means you probably need to win at Tennessee or at Texas. But it's to be in the conversation for Kentucky to be in the college football playoff conversation in the first year of the 12-team expansion would just be absolutely remarkable. I think, you know, through 5 games, Kentucky has essentially traded, you know, I think if we're talking about where we thought Kentucky would be, they essentially traded a loss to South Carolina for a win at Ole Miss. I think that's probably an upgrade there. And so there's a lot left to play out. I'm not overlooking Vanderbilt by any stretch of the imagination. We've seen Kentucky teams under Mark Stoops come out flat after the bye week at times. Kentucky's won 8 of the last 10 against Vanderbilt, but the last, I think, 5 games played in Lexington have been, or 4 of the last 5 in Lexington have been 1-score games. And so Vanderbilt plays Kentucky pretty well in Lexington. They won the last meeting in Lexington to snap their 26-game SEC losing streak in 2022. And so, you know, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's take this 1 week at a time, and that starts in 2 weeks against Vanderbilt.
Chris Fisher, kind enough to join us for a couple minutes. Chris, if they take him lightly, shame on them. Shame on them, you know, and then you're not doing what you're supposed to do. So, you know, that's on them. And you know what? You cannot take him lightly, and maybe Vandy plays for them a perfect game. And so people writing this down, and I'm doing the same thing too, 6-2, they're in the conversation. 6-2, they're probably 20 or, you know, again, you don't know how the hell everybody else is going to do, but you're probably between 15 and 20 nationally, because there'll be a lot of teams at that point with 2 losses. And so that wouldn't surprise me at all. So that if they keep on winning, they'll take care of stuff. I just find it amazing. We're even like I said, it's almost stupefying to me because it was beyond the realm of what I thought was reality. With the 3-2 record, which I thought they would be, because I thought they'd beat South Carolina, and I did not think before the season they would beat Ole Miss. Question, basketball. Mark Pope is talking about competitive spirit. That's his thing, competitive spirit. And apparently in practice, there's a lot of turnovers now, which doesn't bother me because they're figuring out the new system. And so I don't know where the hell these kids are. My sense is because they're old, they're smart, they really want to win. I think these super seniors are going to play ball somewhere in the world. I didn't say necessarily the NBA next year. It doesn't bother me that I hear that they're throwing the ball away a little bit in practice because they got to figure this stuff up. People want everything now. It's not the real world. I think you have to have some patience, and I do. What's your take about what you've heard about what's going on in practice?
Yeah, you know, I think most people are still in the process of kind of rewiring their brains when it comes to, Kentucky basketball, and I think that will continue to be the case with this team. Now, this team is a much more veteran club than we've seen at Kentucky in quite some time. And so maybe you don't have some of the early season growing pains that we've seen in years past with younger teams. And, you know, they're going to need to hit the ground running. I mean, you know, they played Duke in the Champions Classic, I think the second or third game of the season. And so they're going to need to be ready to go. And so I don't think you'll see some of those growing pains. Now, how this club, you know, meshes together with, you know, 12 new scholarship players from last season remains to be seen. And it's always kind of an X factor as to kind of how that all comes together. But I really like the way this Kentucky team is made up. I think they're going to play a really entertaining style of basketball and offense kind of predicated on perimeter shooting. And they certainly have the guys to do that. It's just a matter of those guys kind of coming together and how they come together. But, you know, I think the talent is there. I think the experience is there. And I think, you know, by all accounts, Mark Pope is held at by his peers as an offensive guru. And I think he runs a lot of good stuff, a lot of intricate offensive sets, completely different than what we saw under John Calipari. I think John Calipari wanted his talent to beat your talent one-on-one. I think Mark Pope wants his offense to create open shots, not, you know, he wants the set that he runs to create the open shot, not, you know, a player beating his man off the dribble. And so, excuse me. And so it's going to be a lot different, but I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. And I think this team, based on how it's constructed, I think complements each other. And I think they might be a little bit better than a lot of people nationally are giving them credit for.
And I can understand the national folks, all these new players and stuff, but I have a pet peeve about putting a whole new team together. And it's different than it was 10, 12 years ago. And it started changing a little bit. And I give Cal credit when he brought in all those people when he first got here and recruited a bunch of kids that never would have come here in a million years if obviously Billy Gillespie was here. And he got them together pretty quick. And that's a huge compliment to Cal and the players. But so many teams are now doing this. I think it's kind of changed the mental outlook of the new players, knowing they really have to concentrate more. I'm not saying they did before, but I think there's more of a sense of urgency because of the finite amount of time that these kids have to play together. So, yeah, it's a concern. Yeah, it's a question you need to ask. Yeah, it might not work. But I think more and more teams are becoming really good at it, and that's a credit to the coaches, how they set this thing up. So we need to see, but I'm not as concerned about this as everyone else.
No, I do think there's a new dynamic at play in collegiate athletics, both on the basketball and the football side, where it's a lot harder to instill your program's culture into the players when they're coming from another culture. They're coming from another school. They're coming from another coach. They're coming from another style of play. And so I think it is a little bit more difficult. And I think we've seen some of that kind of play out on the football side with Mark Stoops, you know, who brings, you know, he's probably bringing in an average of 12 or 13 transfers a year. And maybe we don't see as much of the blue collar kind of hard nosed mentality from some of the Kentucky football teams in recent years that we saw earlier in Mark Stoops' tenure, where, you know, those guys were really getting after it and running the ball and, you know, were just a really, you know, hard nosed, gritty bunch. And so I do think it's a little bit more difficult with the transfer portal to instill culture into the players. But I do think Mark Pope is very intentional about the guys that he recruits. I think that's part of the reason why he's put such an emphasis on recruiting the Kentucky kids, because he knows how special it is for them to wear that uniform. And those guys are just going to play just a little bit harder because they have Kentucky across their chest. And obviously guys like Travis Perry, Trent Noah, Malachi Moreno, Jasper Johnson, all those guys are more than talented enough to play at Kentucky, but there's going to be that, you know, just that little bit extra that they're going to bring to the table. I think that gives these Kentucky teams a different mentality under Mark Pope.
Chris, I really like the word. Chris Fisher, you're kind enough to join us for another just couple of minutes. I like the word you used, intentional. And I'm not saying other coaches aren't intentional doing this, because that's a lie and it's baloney. But I think it's one of the things that he and his staff are really good at. And I don't think it's an accident. And I'm not saying other coaches don't look at the backgrounds of players, because that's not true either. But Cal is, you know, give me the talent. We'll put it together. We'll figure it out. And yet there were some players who were good enough to play for Kentucky, and you know this, who he didn't want because, you know, he heard they might be a knucklehead or they might upset the chemistry. But I think Pope is different, because I think he puts that as number one. Like, okay, if you don't have enough talent, forget about it. So let's get past that. But then after that is, how are they going to blend in? And I think it's a super high priority for Pope, and that's one of the reasons why I think these guys will blend together quicker than I think a lot of people think, and I could be way off.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to speak ill of John Calipari. He did a lot of good things for this school, for this community, for the state. But and he recruited an absolute boatload of talent to Kentucky. But with so much talent, I think what started happening was, you know, there's only so much to go around. And when you bring in that much talent, oftentimes there was, I guess, what I would call runoff, where you would have mismatched parts or duplicate parts, guys that he would recruit just for talent purposes. And so you get into a situation where you have duplicate parts. So this guy's playing, but this guy's not. You have mismatched parts where, okay, this guy's strength don't complement this guy's strength. So these two can't play together. And so I don't think you have that with Mark Pope. I think he's recruited guys that complement each other's games. He's talked about seeing the big picture and getting a commitment from this guy. Okay, how does that change the big picture? How does that change what we want to do going forward? And so I think Kentucky has a lot of guys that complement each other's style of play, who are a fit for what Mark Pope wants to do at both ends of the floor. And so I think that's something that, although, you know, the talent level at Kentucky was unbelievable under John Calipari, a lot of times there were just teams that didn't quite fit together. I look at that 2017-18 team that I think he brought in five stars. But, you know, how many forwards did that team have? You had PJ Washington, Sasha Kalea Jones, Winyon Gabriel, Jared Vanderbilt. I mean, you can only put so many of those guys on the floor together at one time. And so, and we saw how that team played out. You know, they had a lot of growing pains, had the first four-game losing streak in a really long time at Kentucky, but then put things together toward the end of the year. They win the SEC tournament championship, but then they get bounced in the Sweet 16 by a much less talented Kansas State team. And so that was just, you know, an observation I think that I had made under John Calipari that I don't think we're going to see as much going forward with Mark Pope.
I agree. Last one. I'm jumping back to football. On a scale of 1 to 10, one, how surprised were you that Stoops went for it, which turned into an unbelievable 63-yard catch and run by Barry and Brown, and you think it's a slight change in his philosophy, or perhaps not?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Mark Stoops can say whatever he wants about, oh, well, you know, this is why we didn't go for it against Georgia, and this is why we did against Ole Miss, but that was certainly Mark Stoops breaking character going for that. I thought, you know, I was actually upset because I thought they were gonna burn a timeout by trying to get Ole Miss to jump or, you know, something on the 4th and 7. I didn't think there was any way that they were gonna snap that ball, and was very surprised when they did. And obviously that worked out. But you know, I do think it was a breaking character for Mark Stoops. That's not what we're used to seeing out of him. And you know, if I'm honest, that conservative mindset is the one that has kept Kentucky in a lot of these games against superior opponents. You know, you play the game in a phone booth, you control the clock. They had a 2-1 time of possession over Ole Miss. They ran the ball, they controlled the game, they shortened the game, they kept that explosive Ole Miss offense off the field. And a lot of those reasons are why Kentucky was in that game in the first place.
I agree. Enjoy your kids. You're crazy for doing the show today with everything you got going on with your family. Two words for you is thank you, and give a great plug for what you do, and people need to read you.
Check me out at catspaws.com. Like I said, part of the 24/7 sports network, at ChrisFisher247 on Twitter or X.
Hey, man, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Alan. Take care.
Chris Fisher, really, really, really good. And he's about as no filter as you can be when you work for 24/7 sports, which I respect tremendously. Plus, he's a really smart guy. He knows his stuff. Nice combination, Jimmy. Really nice combination. He always brings something strong to the table just with his natural opinions. And we appreciate him like everybody else doing the show.
Yeah, I feel like you can be that no filter when you work for a place like that if you come with good points. But if you're just no filter for just criticizing just for the sake of criticizing, it's not going to work. But when you do it and you're consistent, like, oh, well, that's a good point, then you're able to do it.
And I can't stand somebody being no filter for the sake of being no filter. It makes me want to.
Yeah, but we see it out there. But
oh, yeah. Too much, yeah. By the way, yeah. Which gives other people a bad name. Mm-hmm. All good. Okay, let's flip to give you a second to pull this up, John Rothstein. So John's a national guy. He lives and breathes basketball like 24 hours a day. And because he's a national guy, he can get into practice when he's visiting different schools. And then he'll, you know, do some video and write stuff up about teams and that kind of thing. So he just recently had a stop in Lexington. And this was Rothstein's, whose opinion I don't always agree with. So what? But it's an opinion I respect about his time in Lexington, checking out Pope and practice and this Kentucky team.
John Rothstein with his Rothstein reaction after watching Kentucky practice in Lexington. The Wildcats have known commodities with Jackson Robinson, Andrew Carr, and Drexel transfer Amari Williams. But the mystery surrounding Kentucky entering 24-25 is the type of alignment that Mark Pope uses in the Wildcats' backcourt to start the season. There's a bevy of options at Pope's disposal. Lamont Butler, Kirk Creasa, Kobe Brea, Otega Owe, all look like potential starters for Pope, who has a brand new team from last season. Kentucky looks like an NCAA tournament team in 2025, but the makeup of the perimeter will be fascinating to watch from now until opening night on November 4th.
Good stuff. Not shocking, but good stuff. His opinion on that. And he also said that Pope told him that Wake Forest transfer Andrew Carr has been Kentucky's most efficient player. We've heard that before. We've said it before, but this is now an update because it's been weeks since I heard that, and it's a continuation of what I was told and I've said on the air. And he says that Carr is going to be a major focal point at power forward. And the staff at Kentucky believes, so says Rothstein, that Carr can have a similar impact. And, Jimmy, I found this interesting to what Grant Nelson did last year at Alabama. And I think he might end up being better, but if he's just as good, and I see that happening, that's absolutely, it's terrific. It really is. He's a guy that, to me, he and Butler are the two players that I think will battle to see who's on the court the most. We'll see. But if you're asking me to pick two guys who get the most minutes, and I'm going to guess nobody's getting 30 minutes. They got too many players, the way they run so much. I will be, shocked is too strong. I'll be really surprised if anybody gets 30 minutes a game. And there's really no need to it. There's really no need based upon all the talent you have and keeping guys happy. And I know coaches would often say, I'm not worried about keeping guys happy. No. Baloney.
Yeah.
There's more of that than ever before. And so there was nothing surprising out of what he said, but I thought that was interesting. The other thing he put up, he said the surprise here at Kentucky practice has been freshman guard Colin Chandler. Former BYU commit hasn't played in a bit due to the Mormon mission, but is really talented, going to be in the Wildcats rotation. So that tells me a couple things. He obviously was practicing. He had some sort of injury. We don't know what it was. Couldn't even tell you, nor am I going to guess, because I have no idea how much it kept him out of practice. You know, it's safe to wonder because he was away from basketball for so long. Look, you're on a Mormon mission and you can work out an hour a day. It ain't nothing like working out with a college basketball team. It's just not. And it takes a while to get back in shape. He might be young, which he is, but My fear would be for anybody, oh, my gosh, you can pull a muscle so fast it's not even funny. Take your time to ramp them up. And it was pretty obvious from the stuff we heard that Kentucky was very obvious in trying to protect him. Take your time ramping up. And he still got nicked. He might have been nicked anyway. And again, I don't know what it was, so I'm not going to speculate. But from the tape I saw this kid, and I've said this a number of times before, from the tape I saw this kid, man, he goes 100 miles an hour. He can shoot. He's fearless. I think he's going to end up being, I don't know about this year, but I think he's going to end up being a starter and a star for Kentucky. When? Not that smart. I have no idea. It'd be shocking if it'd be this year. Think about it with all the other players, and people will forge their way into rotation. But I thought that was a really good comment because I've had that in the back of my head. This Chandler kid is going to be better than people think. I'm not saying he was been a forgotten one, but he's sort of been a forgotten one because of the Mormon mission, and he's a freshman. But go look at tape. Jimmy, this kid plays hard, and he can shoot, and he can finish. And he's not afraid to finish around the bucket. He can dunk the ball. He's got a mid-range game. He can shoot threes. I think this kid has a ton of potential.
And I'm wondering, too, is there anyone on the roster not to be the same as Reed Sheppard, but who's the guy that people are talking about? Because, you know, this time last year, no one was talking about Reed coming off the bench and leading the Wildcats, like being the guy and then being, you know, number three pick or whatever he was. But is there a guy on the roster? Could that be the Colin Chandler where this, you know, as of right now, we're talking, is he going to be battling for minutes? What's his role going to be? And then it comes out after, you know, a couple weeks and you go, okay, this kid is exactly what they thought. He's going to force his way in. Who's that going to be this year?
Every coach loves that. And I have no idea who that's going to be.
Yeah.
I'm not going to throw names out. I have no idea. I mean, we were surprised by Reed last year.
Sure.
Hopefully somebody will surprise us this year. Coming up, we believe Alvin Brooks, associate head coach at the University of Kentucky basketball team, will be joining us. Appreciate Chris Fisher. Hope you enjoyed all the stuff that we did on Pete Rose and former President Reagan and the other comments. I thought it was special to do. We might do some more stuff later this week also on Pete Rose. I just think with the power of Pete, as long as there's fresh stuff coming out there, we're going to talk about him some more. Coming up, UK basketball. Alan Cutler, 1300 AM, 92.5 FM.
The Alan Cutler Show on ESPN. Lexington. ESPN Sports Radio, 1300 and 92.5. WLXG Lexington, an LM Communications broadcasting station. The only no-filter sports show in Kentucky. It's the Alan Cutler Show with award-winning TV sportscaster Alan Cutler.
And we're waiting for Alvin Brooks to join us. That hopefully will be momentarily. Greg is helping out at UK for that while we're doing that. And it's not often I'm going to get to talk to somebody who knows the state of Idaho because he went to Idaho State, was all Big Sky. Academically and all kinds of stuff like that, has his master's degree. And I have some Idaho questions to ask him. Don't tell him, Greg. I know you're listening. Don't tell him. Don't tell him. It's all good. It's all good. Let me throw out a couple of tidbits that I've been sitting on as we wait. Dick Barnett, you got to be a real old fogey. Jimmy, I'll bet you $100 you never saw Dick Barnett play.
You would be correct.
Yeah, okay. Because he was part of some of the great Nick teams. He is 88 years old. God bless him. And a scholar and a really smart guy. And I've never seen anyone shoot a J like he did. He went to Tennessee State, as I recall, and his feet, Jimmy, would kick back up. It was like a fallback kick. I've never seen anybody shoot like that. He's 88. I watched him a ton, and he was smooth. Silky smooth. You know, back then when the Knicks were really good, they had a lot of smart basketball players. So probably there's only two people in the audience who knows who the hell Dick Barnett is. I just want to say happy birthday to him. 88. Devontae Adams, you talked about this a little bit, Jimmy, didn't you?
Yeah.
Okay, so the rumors, and I could see this happening, and I have no inside information. I could see the Cowboys scooping him up, can't you?
That would be a fascinating one that I have not heard thrown around. I've heard the Saints because his connection with Derek Carr. And then I've heard the Jets, obviously, with Aaron Rodgers. And then the Chiefs are thrown out there. I don't think that can happen with the Chiefs. There's no way that would happen in the division.
Depends what you would offer.
Right.
You know, in the old days, that was really strong about not doing that. It's eased up a little bit, and that will be interesting. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, a man who played basketball at Idaho State, a man who I bet has been to Idaho City. Let's see if I get him this way. Am I right? You've been to Idaho City?
I don't know if I have.
Oh, okay. Okay. I did TV in Boise, Idaho, 1,000 years ago, probably before you were born. And Idaho City, back in the 1860s, you've probably driven through there. It's a really, it's a small town. So, you know, you didn't go there to hang out for a week. but it was one of the two places in the country that was a gold rush town. And they actually a little gold that's there now. And we've been there many, many, many times because my wife is from Boise. I did TV Boise, and I was wondering if you had been to Idaho City. One, thank you for joining us. I know you got 4,000 things going on, so we appreciate your time. To the obvious, what has been the easiest and what has been the toughest thing? Because you left a great job with people that you're unbelievably close to, that you're unbelievably successful, that you could have stayed there till either you became a head coach at a major school or just stayed there with Scott because you guys were so close. And you picked up your family to Lexington, Kentucky. And I'm sure it had nothing to do with money. You're not going to tell me, and I don't care. It's not, but you made a change that couldn't have been easy. So what has been the easiest thing and what has been the toughest thing? Because I don't care who you are when you're moving. There's got to be something that's tough. And I'm not looking for negativity. I'm just talking about life, family, moving, those kinds of things.
The easiest thing, I will go easy first, is the fact that, you know, I have an opportunity to be at the best job in the country when it comes to men's basketball. The tradition has the most wins ever, has the most NBA draft picks ever, and then I'm with great people. So I think that's the easiest thing. The hardest thing was moving my family across the country, you know. We have an 8-year-old. My wife and I have an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old. And we were at Baylor for 8 years. So that's all they knew. And even now at times, you know, one of our sons will miss his friends and, you know, just, you know, have a moment and have a human moment where he misses friends. And it's something that we have to be there for him. And, you know, it's not, you know, not something that, you know, you really think about, but that's all he knew. And that's the only friends that he's ever had. So that's been the toughest thing.
That can't be easy. That can't be easy at all.
It's not easy at all.
And I'm assuming that probably was a serious consideration before you said yes. You and your wife probably sat down, okay, this is why it's good professionally, but personally, family-wise, can we handle it? That had to be part of the conversation.
A huge part of the conversation. If it didn't work out for my family, you know, as great as a job Kentucky is, then I wouldn't be here. And we have our oldest son has severe autism. And so we had to make sure that Lexington had the resources to be able to help them. And, you know, thankfully so, Lexington has a school specifically for kids with special needs that he's able to attend. And it's been a prayer answered for our family. Our boys have adjusted and they actually, you know, they are liking school a lot. You know, it's just the human nature of missing people that you love.
Speaking of love, how young were you when you decided I love basketball?
Oof.
You remember?
I love football before I love basketball.
Okay.
I'm one of those kids that I'm a typical, I didn't want to follow in my dad's footsteps. And so I tried my best to kind of create my own path. But, you know, like, you know, you talking about love, you can't stop what you love. I mean, I have a business finance degree. I have a master's degree in sports administration. So for a year, I was a financial advisor half of the year. And I was, you know, seeing if I wanted to be athletic director the other half of the year. But I was miserable. I was chasing money. And then I went and watched a couple of practices with the Seattle Sonics. And I realized, man, I love basketball.
Pretty simple, and it makes perfect sense. Chase what you love, and the money will usually take care of itself, and you got to be happy. That's my thing, is I was very lucky. I mean, I did what I loved. I knew, you know, not to belabor me, but when I walked into Yankee Stadium in 1959 for the first time and walked through that tight alleyway, this is the old Yankee Stadium, where literally, you know, this thing was built, the house that Babe Ruth built, and the corridors were really tight. and you had a turn just to get through the, you know, it's very different, that kind of thing. And when I saw the field for the first time, I knew I wanted to do this for a living. I can't explain it, but it stayed with me. So, you know, the love that we have for things that we do, I always find people that find something they love to do are so fortunate and so blessed and so lucky. I always feel bad for somebody who spends their whole life, I don't care if they make tons of money, not doing what they enjoy. So my perception was you're one of those people that love what you do. So therefore, I consider that lucky and blessed. Make sense?
I am 100% lucky and blessed. When I started off in junior college, you know, my dad wanted me to start in junior college to make sure I did love it because he knew I wouldn't be making a lot of money. And he thought that I wouldn't last long. And so he would call me every 2 weeks saying, how you like it? And I said, I love it. And so it was an opportunity for me to grow. And 21 years later, I'm blessed to be here in Kentucky.
And you probably don't miss the cold ham sandwiches that were probably soggy in the little box, right? How bad was the food at junior college? There's no budget. I mean, I don't care where you are. How bad was the food and those kinds of things?
I mean, it was, you know, I actually, when I first started, I wasn't privileged. I didn't have a card to eat. And so, and I couldn't, you know, I don't know. I was just telling one of our GAs yesterday, I was like, man, I look back, I'm not sure how I survived, but I did. Because, you know, through the help of a village of people helping me. But yeah, it wasn't a lot of eating great meals, I tell you that. Not what our guys are blessed to eat, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, your GAs now are eating steak, I'm sure.
Yes.
There's plenty of steak to go around. This is Kentucky. You know, that's the one thing. I got to know pay, and you're not the first person I've talked to about this. I get to know pay and that kind of stuff, and you got to pay your dues and all. But the food part, I never understood. Like, it didn't cost that much to give you a meal card. But, you know, that to me, that was almost cruel. You're one of thousands of guys who didn't get meal cards, and I've never understood that. Never. Just me. By the way, can I come clean? I'm so old, I actually saw your father play.
Wow. Okay.
I told you I'm that old.
Daddy, I wouldn't say that's old. I would say that's a blessing.
Okay. And it's a blessing. I still get to do what I like to do. So that's how I look at that. Okay. So I'm going to push you a little bit, if that's okay. By the way, all this is off the top of my head. What makes you such a good coach?
Oh, great question. I would say that I'm genuine. And so I think you can't coach someone until they know that you care. And I genuinely build relationships and show guys that I care about them as a person. And I would say my attention to details, like I feel like my attention to details separates me, but it also allows our players to be able to separate themselves. And then just finding different ways to help the program win. Like, I've been blessed to, you know, I didn't know this before I came here, but I've been blessed to be a part of a lot of winning in my career. And like at Baylor, in my 8 years, we won over 70% of our games. And so I feel like I know what it takes to win. And because I was blessed to learn it at an early age as a coach, I'm blessed to be a part of two national championships at two different junior colleges back-to-back years, it helps show me what it takes to win no matter how many resources you have. And I've carried those ways to be able to help guys build the habits that you need to win.
What's the number one thing you learned from your father about basketball?
That if you treat it well, it could take care of you and your family for the rest of your life.
Wow. Wow. That's obviously, so you're a lifer. When did your dad hit you with that?
I mean, I look at it. My dad, you know, he was a player in college when I was born, and he became a coach immediately after. He had a chance to chase the professional dream, but he didn't because of, you know, he had me at a young age. And I just watched the decisions that he made. He turned down a lot of Power Five opportunities to stay at Lamar and to stay at Houston just to be closer to me and my sister. And like, he always showed me that, you know, that basketball could take care of you. And so, like, you know, growing up, I lived in the inner city, and now you know, my dad was able to show me that it's a different path through the game of basketball. Like, basketball is a vehicle to be able to help you. And so he showed me, you know, through hard work, obviously, you have to make sure you work hard and allow the game to take care of you and, you know, also the people around you.
Alvin Brooks, kind enough to join us for a couple more minutes, associate head basketball coach at the University of Kentucky. You're just about 20 years in the business. And so what is the difference coaching, when I say kids, I'm sorry, I'm old, I don't mean any disrespect. What is the difference between coaching kids today versus when you started as a junior college coach? Or is there a difference in your mind?
I think the biggest difference is social media. And the fact of everything is kind of instant here. I mean, it's more like the student athletes don't really have a chance. Like, if, you know, mental health is more in the open, and I think, you know, they can easily click on social media and they can easily post and feel a certain way depending on how many likes they receive. I think that may have changed more than anything, just the self-esteem part based off of what other people may think of them, instead of just worrying about who you are is who you are, no matter what nobody else think about you.
I have a crazy theory, and please tell me I'm wrong. I think it's different today because of social media, for all the obvious reasons and all the things you're saying. But my sense is, because I know a lot of former players who, you know, are now in their 40s and 50s, because I've been in the business 45 years. And I know there have been so many great players at Kentucky who thought about leaving when they were freshmen. I've done a lot of TV stories on it when I used to do TVs, that they would admit it later on. And I get why you're not going to admit it at the time. You can't. That's fine. And all that kind of stuff. But my sense is there has been a lot of players who internalize these mental difficulties and didn't know how to reach out. And just kept it within themselves. But I don't think these problems are new. I think they're amplified more. But I just don't think they're new. And I think the fact that today you can get help, and today I would think just about every big school, and every school should have it, has somebody you can honestly go talk to. I think it's a beautiful thing. But I think this was around when you played and when your dad played, in a different form, but the same sort of thing. But you couldn't admit that you were bleeding. You couldn't admit that you were cut. You couldn't believe that you couldn't talk about that you stubbed your toe. Do you agree or disagree, or what's your thought process? Because now between you and your father, you've been around a long time.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think about how, you know, I grew up. I'm 45 years old, and I remember how I grew up. I was always told, you know, stop crying. Men don't cry. And that was kind of the stage of life that I was brought up in, to where now I have an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old. And if they cry, I allow them to cry. And then I kind of ask them, why are you crying, if I don't know? And so I think this is more of a why generation, to where when I was playing, you couldn't ask why. You just had to do it because the coach said do it.
Yep.
So I think it's different in those ways, to where, you know, this generation, they have to know the why, and they'll perform better if they do know the why. But they're not just going to do something because you say do it. So I think that's a huge difference.
Anybody in the team really surprising you? Ryan Black of the Courier did something recently with Pope. And if you got to keep trade secrets, I'm good with it. But, you know, that you say, okay, this guy is really good, but he's actually better than I thought, because – I don't care what team you're on, whatever, you have a thought about somebody, and all of a sudden somebody says, hey, he's even better than I thought, or something. Are there some kids that are sticking out that you can share with us?
I'll just say that, like, I don't want to single anybody out, because this is the first time I've ever been a part of a team where I seen two guys maybe play in person before we had a chance to actually work with them. And so I think I've been surprised by all of them at some point, just because from day one to now, a lot of them have took a big jump and have gotten better. And so I've been surprised at how coachable they are as a team. If I want to say anything I'm surprised by, this is one of the most coachable groups that I've ever been a part of. And so to me, that's the biggest thing. And, you know, we just got to make sure that they – they're not stuck by our coaching and still allowed to just play the game and don't do it just because we said do it.
Ooh, that last comment, that's really powerful. Like, okay, like challenge me or ask me, you know, why are we doing this and do you have a better idea? That's a team-led thing is what you're saying. Like, we know what the heck we're doing, but if you have a better idea, we're open to listen to you. Am I reading you right?
Yes. I mean, it was a time on practice the other day where, you know, it was an action that happened and we normally wouldn't switch. Well, the one player communicated to the other player to switch, but the other player said, no, we don't switch. And like it's in the middle of the play. And in that situation, they're doing what the coaches have asked them to do. But at the same time, if your brother says switch, there's a reason why he wanted to switch at that moment. So listen to one another. And, you know, that's the sign of being a very coachable team. And so we just have to make sure that even if we say do it, if your brother on the court says do it, listen to your brother before you listen to the coaches so we can stay on the same page.
And they're probably not used to that. Am I right?
No, they're not. They're not. And so, but that's a sign of great, great kids because they want to do what we ask them to do. But we also need them to just play basketball because they've been playing for a long time.
Sure. I'm going to guess from what you said that you had to be a little uncomfortable now coaching kids when you've only seen two of them play live because you're not used to that because of all the history you've had at other places. Yet by the same token, too, that had to be a little uncomfortable for all you guys. Yes?
It was because now you're dependent on film. And, you know, film doesn't tell you really how tall someone is. Film doesn't give it justice of how fast someone really is. I mean, you could look at the numbers and see if they can shoot or not, but you can't see all the intangibles and you can't see how coachable they are and you can't see if they work extremely hard. So it was kind of really tough, but I think we've done a great job of evaluating and making as many calls as possible to check the character. And I think we've been blessed to have the guys that we have.
So, okay, the way I have, you're telling me what I thought, that every coach wants to check backgrounds, some more than others. Nothing is perfect. Everybody's got their own system way of doing stuff. What I've sort of heard that you guys, maybe maniacal is too strong. You guys were very, very, very conscious about trying to find out as much as you can about these kids as people, because you had to mesh a million of them together at once, which is not an easy thing for any coach to do. And once you realize, okay, really, duh, does he have the talent to play here? Yes. Okay. Now put that aside. Now everything else almost was like the personality and meshing and how important it was. But even after you did it, you had to see it for yourself after they came here. Do I have the right scenario or no?
You have the very correct scenario. And I mean, this is Kentucky. So they're going to be in the light, and it's going to be a very bright light. And so you want to make sure that you have the right people representing the brand of Kentucky. And so we did a lot of homework, and, you know, just like anything, you know, I've been places to where, you know, kids change when they get to the place, but we've actually been blessed to where everyone has stayed the same no matter what. And, you know, we just got to make sure when the games start and we're on TV and the lights get brighter, we got to make sure that who we are today, we still continue to be that.
You got a funny or goofy story about something that's happened that's clean that you can share with us off the top of your head since you've been here?
Oof.
I'm putting you on the spot. It's no big deal. I got to come clean. I'll stall, see if you can come up with something. But I told Deb Moore, that it was 100-1 that this is a conversation. This is not an interview. I don't do interviews anymore. I'm past that point in life. Because if you don't have a conversation, because if it's an interview, nobody wants to come back. I'll do my ranting when there's no guest, but when there's a guest, it's a conversation. I don't put people against the wall. I'm not 60 minutes. I'm just not doing it. But I got to come clean with you. Coach Brooks, I told Deb it was 100-1 that I would make you laugh somewhere in this conversation, and I'm failing right now, so I need some help.
No. You're not failing at all. That's a tough question, though. I don't, you know, obviously, I think we have a comedian on the coaching staff. He has a gift of making everyone laugh. Jason Hart is a comedian.
Oh, interesting.
He has a big personality and, like, he makes us laugh every single day. And so if I had to say anything, that's probably the biggest surprise of just Coach Hart always making us laugh. But other than that, stories, I mean, we, you know, obviously so many people around, it's always going to be stories. But right now, I can't even tell you what stands out. Nothing stands out more than the other right now.
It's all good. I appreciate your time tremendously. I wish you all the luck in the world. I'm glad your family got settled in, because without winning basketball, I know, you know, that's what the world cares about. I'm a little different, family first. You know, and I wish you the best of luck, and maybe somewhere down the road you can give us 15, 20 minutes again if it fits with your busy schedule. Sure. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Pleasure talking to you as well, and I'm looking forward to it again.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, how about that? What a lovely man. Seriously, Alvin Brooks, associate head basketball coach at the University of Kentucky. Jimmy, is that too strong? He's a lovely, grounded, caring man. And by the way, if you look at his Twitter account and stuff like that, there are so many friendly things that he will tweet out about people and stuff like that. And I don't think it's for a show. I think that's just who he is.
Yeah, and you can tell that with a coach like that, just, you know, you talking to him for that 20 minutes and just seeing him the whole time, he does seem like he genuinely cares about the kids. And there are some times where in coaches in college, you don't get that anymore, because it is so much just about the winning, and if we don't win, I'm going to be gone, so all I care about is winning, and, you know, if we win, then you'll be happy, kind of a mindset that some coaches have.
Couldn't agree more. You know, and plus with his family situation, let's say Pope is here. Look, this is just a wild guess. Let's say Pope is here 10 years, which I could easily see. Mm-hmm. Unless he's going to become a head coach, and I'm a little surprised he hasn't become a head coach, and this is before he came here, by the way. I mean, have I followed his career tremendously? No. But did I know who he was? Yes. And did I know what he did at Baylor? Yes. And so actually, after they won the national championship, Jimmy, I thought he'd become a head coach. And they got all these schools in Texas who need people like him. Plus his dad's from there. I mean, this is a young man from Texas. When I say young man, I'm old. And maybe he's had offers that we don't know about, and that's fine. And I didn't want to pin him to the wall about that. But the point is this. I'm a little surprised he's not a head coach, yet I could see him staying here with Mark until he becomes a head coach, because he's not going to move his family five times. Yeah. It's not happening. And maybe one of the reasons why he didn't move from Baylor is because of the situation with his family. He didn't want to jump every couple of years and those kinds of things. And that to me makes perfect sense. I think he's a wonderful addition. And that's interesting. We have not had Jason Hart on the air. And Deb, thank you so much. And you will be getting a text from me about trying to get Jason Hart on the air. Hopefully in the next couple of weeks we can. They have a comedian on the staff. That's good. That's good. Cracking up, because, my gosh, these guys have meetings every single day, right? I mean, even if they're in different parts of the country, they're doing Zoom, this, that. You spend more time with the team and your fellow coaches than you often do with your family. That's not unusual. So getting along is huge, and having a comedian on the team is really, really important.
Yeah, you need that. It's just for meeting rooms, and like you said, the long times throughout the season, or even after you have a bad loss at somebody, you need someone that's just going to be able to be there, to be themselves, and be able to lighten up the room. You don't need someone that's trying to lighten the room, that's not good at, you know what I mean? There's always, you know, you have those coaches too, where it's like, okay, stop, enough of that. But when you have someone with heart, like, that's got that type of personality naturally, you can't even quantify what that does to just a building or a team.
Okay, the best thing he said, in my opinion, and I'm curious what you think, when he talked about, when I asked him what was his strength as a coach, and he talked about how he believed he was genuine. Yeah. And you, I don't know the man. I've never talked to him before now. I've done all kinds of reading about him, obviously, since the name was out there coming to Kentucky. And again, I have followed his career, but he was talking from the heart. That's how I picked up from it. And for a man to talk about how he's genuine and be comfortable in his own skin to share that with us and our audience, I thought that was very powerful.
Yeah, I agree. I love that part. And just that you said that he's genuine, because the players can see if a coach is genuinely being a kind person or just a good person in general, or if it's a show, because they see what you're like when – you know, you're not technically on duty as a coach or at practice or in a meeting. The players can see right through that. And that's how you can tell when a team loses the coaching staff or vice versa, is when you're fake and you're not yourself. But when you're genuine and you're real, and Mark Pope seems to be the same way. Cody Feger seems to be the same way from when we spoke to him. They all seem to be those type of coaches, not the two-faced where it's like, oh, so you're that way to the media, but when you're around us, you're a totally different person. And I don't see that.
We haven't talked to Jason Hart yet. We will, but I believe he's exactly the same. And I think that's a credit to Pope in putting the staff together. I mean, I really think that's to his credit, his ability to figure people out and to blend people together. I think it's going to be one of the huge keys to his tenure at Kentucky, which is just beginning. I think the last time, and I'm not anxious, so that's not the proper word. Anticipation? I think this is the most I've anticipated and looking forward. I always looking forward to basketball. Except when they went through the NCAA mess, and that was a horrible time in my career, just trying to do those stories and stuff like that. But generally speaking, just about every year, I always look forward to basketball. And I think the last time I was this excited about seeing what Kentucky had, believe it or not, wasn't when Billy Gillespie became the coach, because I wasn't comfortable right away. And I've talked about it, but let's leave that alone for this point. I'm not going on that kind of tangent. But when Cal came, and I will always stand by this, as far as I'm concerned, I have never seen a better recruiting class on a dime than what John Calipari put together when he showed up here. And if Kentucky wins a national championship this year, you'd have to put Pope's class in there. But, you know, to get the John Walls and DeMarcus Cousins and all those guys that wouldn't have had a sniff at Kentucky if Billy Gillespie was the coach, was just unbelievable. I don't want the next 11 days to happen really quick. I'm patient. It's a day less you're on this earth, but I really want to see meaningful games. You know, the blue white will be, it's a show, it's a practice, that kind of stuff. It'll be more of a practice than normal. It's all good, but I'm that anxious to see it. And I don't think I'm the only one. And I think it has more to do with Mark Pope, the person, more than Mark Pope, the former UK basketball player. And I think that's number two, but Mark Pope, the person. Because I know Mark Person and I know how smart he is. Yeah, that's all part of it too. It's a really good man, Mr. Brooks, isn't he?
Yeah, he really is. And just hearing the way he talked about his family and his kids, and that, you know, you could tell like there was genuine, not concern, but just how much he cares about what his family feels. Because there are some coaches that move around every 2 years and they're just like, well, the kids are along for the ride. Yeah. Family's along for the ride. But just seeing that the genuine, it goes back to just the genuineness that he has. And looking to the city of Lexington first before he accepted a job to make sure his kids would be comfortable. Those little kind of things, that translates to coaching and his relationship with the players.
Alvin Brooks Jr., thank you so much for your time. Deb Moore, thanks for your help. More coming up next. Alan Cutler, 1300 AM, 92.5 FM.
The Alan Cutler Show on ES Cutler. Podcasts on Apple, Spotify, and Google, Monday through Friday.
That was really good, and it was fun. And if you're just tuning in, Jimmy will have the podcast of the show up like he always does before he leaves the studio. And at 2 o'clock, boom, he's out the door, so he takes care of it quickly. It's usually up by about 2:15. It takes a little while on WLXG.com. If you're just joining us and you missed the conversation with Alvin Brooks, go back and listen to it. I mean, this is all about Alvin the person. And terrific. And Chris Fisher was very good as well. We also, if you're just joining us, just to plug what we've done, the stuff about Pete Rose I thought was really good. The stuff about Kentucky basketball was really good. The Mark Pope interview we played I thought was really good. So there's a lot of stuff in here that is terrific. We're going to go back to Stoops from his radio show that's on Monday night, and this is a light week for UK football. As you know, the coaches and players that normally talk do not. They gave them the week off. I get it. They should. Stoops will talk a couple times this week, once locally and once on the SEC media day. So it's light with that. And I'm going to go to clip 8. And what could have been much more negative than it was ended up not being as negative, but I still don't like it. And you applaud Barry and Brown for that 63-yarder, the catch, and the move after. It is a play that I think there'll be Kentucky fans. I'm serious. 10 years from now, they'll remember the play, and maybe even longer. And there's no question, at least in my mind, I can't think of a bigger win that Stoops had during the regular season. You know, the first bowl game, But during the regular season, I can't think of one. I think that's a pretty popular opinion. But what really ticked me off, and probably you too, and I'm not trying to harp on it, but it's the kind of thing that just can't happen again. I mean, it just can't. And you've heard me say, Jimmy, how many times that Brown and these receivers, they're divas. That doesn't mean they're bad people. That doesn't mean they don't care. That doesn't mean they don't care about the team. I'm not suggesting that. And in some cases, it's true, but I'm not suggesting with Barron Brown. I'm not. But you can't get an unsportsmanlike penalty. Matter of fact, Jimmy, I don't think there's been another unsportsmanlike penalty on the team this year, has there? I can't think of one.
Not that sticks out. Maybe in the South Carolina game, there might have been one, just a frustration penalty, but not that sticks out like this one does.
I don't remember. If anybody can think of one, please correct me. The text line, Jimmy, is, we don't give the text line number out, and shame on me, that's my fault. Text line number, Jimmy, is?
381-1313.
Do you have to hit 859?
Well, I guess if you don't live in Lexington, yeah, 859-381-1313.
Okay, so when he got the unsportsmanlike penalty, I said a couple words to the TV set that, Jimmy, you'd have to hit the button. I mean, I'm just being honest. I mean, was I loud and violent or something? No, but it was kind of like, what the blank, blank, blank. Is that fair?
Yeah.
That's the level. Not loud, not going crazy or anything like that. But there are certain things that are just not necessary. And I was trying to think at the time, what would Nick Saban have done? Okay. And so this is not a shot against Mark Stoops. He's been here 12 years. I think he's done a hell of a job, and that's fine. But the measuring stick still is Nick Saban in the last 20 years. And I think, Jimmy, you'll agree with that, right?
Yes.
Do you ever feel what Saban would do? My sense is the kid would have been pulled. And I don't know if he would have played again. It wouldn't have shocked me if he wouldn't have played again. But on the other hand, the other side of my brain says, you know, Saban's going to be about discipline, but he also doesn't want to hurt himself. But he also wants to teach a lesson to one of his kids. And he's big on that stuff. And I'm not saying Stoops isn't. But do you have a guess? And I don't. And I don't want to guess. But I was wondering literally at that moment, what the blank would Saban do? Do you think he would have sat him for the rest of the game? Or you think he would have pulled him out? And I could see Saban doing this. And he has done this before. I could see him pulling him out and jawing on him face to face. That gets on TV. And da-da-da-da. And, you know, Mark's style is Mark's style. And Nick's style is Nick's style. And so if Mark Stoops' style is different, that doesn't mean he's wrong. That's his style. Okay? So there's not a message there. But I'm curious what you think Saban would have done.
I don't think he would have pulled him for the rest of the game, but I definitely think there would have been maybe a drive or something. There would have been some sort of repercussions. At the very least, it would have been a verbal shellacking, I think, on the sideline. Headset would have come off, and you definitely would have gotten a what the are you doing, which we've seen with Nick Saban a lot, where he takes the headset, throws it down, or just puts his hands up and just looks at him with that I'm very disappointed look. Not angry, but I'm very disappointed in what you're doing.
I think it would have been much more than very disappointing. The rest of what you said, I agree with 100%. Yeah, I can see him taking him out and jawing at him like crazy. I really can.
Yeah.
Because that's Saban, and he has more power or had more power than any other coach, whatever. But you can't have this happen again. You just can't. Yeah. Yeah. I don't care if you're Brock, who I can't imagine him doing that. I can't imagine, you know, Barry and Brown doing it again. But it's wrong. So this is clip number 8, and Stoops came out of this with a positive comment, and I could see this, and I don't think he was shilling for the kid. Oftentimes, when you have somebody lose their cool, they lose it mentally, and they get their head taken out of the game, and I could see if this happened in the first 4 or 5 games that Barry and Brown played for Kentucky, that could have ruined his afternoon. It really could have. And it didn't. So Stoops obviously didn't like what Brown did to get the unsportsmanlike penalty, but he came up with a positive angle for Barry and getting the unsportsmanlike penalty.
just the result for him to come back, you know, and that just shows his maturity. I mean, no, we don't want that. You know what I mean? You know, it's totally unacceptable. He knows that. But a year ago, maybe he wouldn't have bounced back like he did. You know, when people get on, when people talk to him and coach him, and just he wanted to come back and make a play for his team. He did. You know, just proud of him for responding. Not proud of the penalty.
I think that's a perfect way of putting it, and it really shows Stoops' personality. Now, here's what I don't know. I'm not guessing, but I can tell you I believe these things have happened and we'd all find out. Would it shock you? Again, I don't know. I'm not speculating. But they do a lot of things discipline-wise that never comes out to the media. And I get it. I mean, would I like to know? Sure. But I get why they keep it in-house. Would it surprise me that Berrien is running the steps a couple times this week? Would it surprise me? No. Do I know? No. Am I starting something? No. But it wouldn't surprise me. Even after the 63-yard play, even after the great victory, you're teaching kids lessons. Would it surprise you if he had to run the steps 6 o'clock in the morning?
I would be more surprised if he didn't. Whatever the discipline is, if it's log rolls, which some coaches prefer that, which that's terrible. It makes you just want to throw up the whole time. Or steps or something. He probably had to do. I would be more surprised if they said no. And again, you will never find out. But if there was no repercussions for that, and or in any player, not just Berrien Brown specifically, because it was in that big moment, any type of those mental penalties like that, the mental mistakes where you do that, I feel like there's some sort of repercussions the next week.
You know, there was a time when we used to go to practice. At the end, they would let us in, like. Really, when they were just, you know, finishing up and that kind of stuff, they wouldn't let you in until then. Mm-hmm. And more than once, this is before Stoops, more than once, somebody was doing those log rolls,
yeah,
and doing it after practice. And I'm absolutely positive. We all were absolutely positive because you can make the kid do it on a different time. You can make a kid do it before practice starts, that they were doing it on purpose after practice so that that player got a little negative publicity. Just to say, okay, we're going to get you physically, we're going to get you mentally, and the question's asked, well, what did that person do? Well, it was just a discipline thing, that kind of thing. I don't think it was an accident. Never thought it was an accident. Why would you do it in front of the media? Yeah. Why would you do it? They're not stupid. They don't do these things by accident. It's not a slip. It doesn't happen. But here's the other thing, and again, I don't know this, and I know this has happened, and I know you know it's happened. There are times when someone does something unsportsmanlike or that kind of thing where everybody in the position group has to run. It's not often, but there are some coaches that do that. And one of the reasons for doing that isn't to get the other wide receivers in shape, but there's a peer pressure where guys say, hey, bleep you.
Accountability.
Yeah, I got to get up and run because you screwed up. And actually, in a way, I kind of like that. I'm not talking about being mean. I'm not talking about punishment. I'm not talking about, okay, for the rest of the season, you got to get up 6 o'clock in the morning and run. No, but I kind of like the position thing, and I've always liked the position thing, because then you're having the players among themselves. It's different if you have to run, which sucks.
Yeah.
Okay? If all your peers that you're in the meeting rooms with every single day, they have to run too, now you got to answer to them. And I think that amplifies the punishment tremendously. And I always like when coaches did it, and the temperature I got, some coaches did it, not a lot. That was always my – did you ever – were you ever on a team where they made everybody in the position run?
Yeah, and it – that type of punishment I feel like is better. Or I've even heard – I never personally experienced this, but, you know, ex-players talked about it. Or if, let's say, you missed your time or you were late for something where they made everyone else in your position group run and you didn't have to run. But everyone else did for your mistake, ooh, and you had to watch them run. And that's, ooh, almost it, like it plays that mind game with you where you go, whoa, okay, now I'm sitting here having to watch them get punished for something I did. And I feel like those types of, and you don't do that every time, but when you do pull that out as a coach, that's kind of like your ace in the hole that you got, where it's like, this is going to be more impactful than just making him run. Because then again, it goes back to, if it's a very selfish penalty you got, you're only being punished for your own mistakes, but now your friends and your teammates and your brothers are being punished for something you did. So that's going to be what lasts longer.
I like that, except for one thing. I would still make that player run by himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Without, you know, if you're going to do that, can you imagine the other wide receivers? They're running and Brown isn't.
Yeah.
How ticked off they would be.
Yeah. Yeah. But I feel like this could be one of those, and it may not be talked about later, but just within the coaching staff, and because Berrien responded the way he did and wanted to go back and make that play, who knows, this could look back to be that was the turning point for Berrien Brown to really reach his full potential. Just as a human, as a player, as an athlete, this could be the moment where it finally flips. And not that he hasn't been great before this, but just within the team, that could be the moment. Who knows? Where we look back and say, you remember that personal foul against Ole Miss? And then he responded with that 63-yard play? Maybe this is where it just really takes off.
Look at you being so positive with a positive spin. Am I rubbing off on you a little bit?
I don't know.
You didn't used to be like that. You know, contrary to my tough things that I say, I always try to look for the positive.
Yeah.
Is it out there all the time? No, shouldn't be out there. It's not going to happen. Cue up the 63-yard play if you got it. Give me a thumbs up when you did, and then we're going to go on to another thing. So I'm going to assume nobody will ask Stoops, and this is not bad reporting, did Brown have to do anything? Because Stoops will say the obvious. Hey, whatever we did or didn't do, it's a discipline thing. It's a personal thing. I'm not going to say. And so sometimes when you say, well, you're supposed to ask the question, well, there's yes and no. Sometimes you just really have to ask the question. There are other times you know you're not going to get an answer. You just don't even ask. You don't ask. And I wonder if he learns from it. But this play, though, will be remembered for a long time. Sounds like the machine is not firing up, Jimmy. Yeah, we'll pass. Computers are great until they're not, right? Isn't that usually how it works? Ah, here it is, about to play. Oh, I did it again, didn't I? Did you shut my mic off because I'm an idiot?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
It was playing, you just couldn't hear it on your end.
Yes, this is the second time that's happened. I need to remember now in the future. My bad. Were you laughing at me knowing that I made that mistake?
No, I had muted you, so I couldn't hear you.
Did you mute me right away?
Yeah, I did.
Bless you, dude. Bless you, dude. Crazy things with equipment and stuff like that. Now that you heard the play, the 63-yarder, thanks to the UK Radio Network and Tom Leach, of course, who does a spectacular job of the play-by-play. This is clip number 10. And Stoops trying to give us a little play-by-play of what was going through his mind when Brown, the snap happened, and Brown made the play.
I saw him open, so I was praying, I guess. I felt good about it. I saw him open. On the field goal try, I turned around to Brad, and I think I took my headset off, and I told him, I said, man, we're due one. You know what I mean? Like, we're due. Like, we're due for a block or a miss. I mean, it's our time. And, you know, sure enough, it happened. So, very blessed, very fortunate, and great win for everybody.
Are you more comfortable crowd surfing now, second tomorrow?
You saw that already?
Right.
It's viral? No, it goes quick. Yeah. I tried to tuck my shirt in. Yeah, I'm probably a little more sore. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
So, DB in college, but now 30 years later, whatever, you get sore. I get it. I want to thank Chris Fisher. He was really good. Want to have a huge thank to Alvin Brooks. That was close to spectacular, learning about Alvin Brooks, the person. A lovely man. He gets it. He gets it. And you could get a feel, and if you missed it, go listen to the podcast. You can get a feel of why he's such a successful coach. The basketball part, it's kind of easy. I mean, his dad, college coach, his dad was a hell of a player. I watched his dad play. You know, he was a really good player. So, you know, you're born into this, and so you have advantages when that happens. But the people part, that's the part that makes a difference. So I think you picked up on that. And so that was fun. It was enjoyable. And hopefully one of these days he'll join us again. And let's put it this way. We hope to get Jason Hart on maybe next week. We'll see. But the staff that they have here is absolutely, I think, spectacular. Jimmy, as always, thank you so much. Brad Taylor coming up next. Matthew and Jimmy tomorrow at 10. I'll be back at noon. Have yourself a lovely day. Thanks for tuning in. Tell your friends, please, because you that spread the word or helping this show grow. To that, I should say thank you, thank you, and thank you. Alan Cutler, 1300 AM, 92.5 FM.